second trumpet is about to sound. The first trumpet fouled the earth, ruined the earth, burned the earth. The second trumpet deals with the sea. Every realm known to man, and it has been a comfort to man, is going to be pulled out from under man. God is doing this to wake up the world and to clear the table and establish his government. Hello, everyone. Again, this is Martin Zender, the second trumpet, reading from the Unveiling, chapter 8, verse 8. And the second messenger trumpets, remember, these are celestial beings that John is seeing, sounding these alarms and enacting what the seals portended. The second messenger trumpets, and as it were, this is important wording, as it were, because it doesn't mean that this is literally what this thing is that John sees. But listen to this. As it were, a huge mountain burning with fire was cast into the sea, and a third of the sea became blood, and a third of the creatures in the sea, which have a soul, died, and a third of the ships decayed. It's funny language, especially when you get to a third of the ships decayed. But much of our commerce is done by the shipping industry. If you've ever been to San Francisco, you see those barges, shipping barges, international shipping barges coming under the Golden Gate Bridge with the shipping containers, thousands of them. Anytime you've ever been to a port, whether New York or New Jersey or Los Angeles or San Francisco, you have those shipping containers stacked, thousands of them, and you see them pulled on trains. Much of our commerce comes via water. And you know, even in war, what do men do? They cut out transport lines. In the Civil War, everybody tried to blow up the railroads. Everybody tried to blow up the roads, and especially bridges over water. The Navy, the Air Force, and the Army to protect the sea, the land, and the air. God is taking away the sea, the land, and the air. The first trumpet took away the land. The second trumpet takes away the sea. And we're going to see the third trumpet tomorrow is going to take away the air. It's going to foul the air with noxious gas. God's taken down everything. Everything that's been a comfort to human beings. He can't do ordinary things anymore because we've been lulled to sleep. Not you and I, but the world. And as it were, a huge mountain burning with fire was cast into the sea, and a third of the sea became blood, and a third of the creatures in the sea which have a soul died, and a third of the ships decayed. The shipping industry. Done. A third of it. Significant. What is this mountain now? A huge mountain burning with fire. This is what John sees. Keep that in mind. As it were a huge mountain. So the only language he has, he uses, and he says it was like a huge mountain falling into the sea. It almost sounds like a volcano, but it's the figure of speech here suggests otherwise. Was cast into the sea. A volcano being cast into the sea. It's on fire. I propose to you this is a meteor. A gigantic chunk of rock that looks like a mountain to John. And it's on fire. And it plunges into the sea. And at this point, a third of the water turns to blood. You say, well, Martin, this doesn't make sense. Okay, let's be patient here. Things are happening that have never happened before. It doesn't mean that, say, this meteor is packed with blood and it releases it into the sea. Let's go back to Egypt. How did Moses turn the river into blood? Yes, with his staff. He put the staff in the water and it turned to blood. It was supernatural. You're not going to be able to explain these things that are literally happening to the earth with terms or scientific principles or methods that we're familiar with. This is unfamiliar territory, big time, to say the least. So it's a meteor or an asteroid, I believe, giant chunk of rock. And by this means, at this time, let's put it that way, not by this means, but at that time, it's like the rod in Egypt, but we're seeing this extrapolated into the gigantic third of the earth type of thing. This is a third of the earth type of thing. This is not a localized plague in Egypt. So this giant asteroid falls into the earth, and at that time, into the sea, and at that time, the waters were turned to blood. And at the first trumpet, the blood came from the sky, mixed with fire. Now, we're seeing blood too, but it's the sea. It's a much larger thing. And you think, well, it seems, again, so improbable. But when you think of God compared to you, try this. Think of God as able to do bigger, better, greater things than you're able to do. If you took a 3 foot, let's say 3 foot in diameter model of the earth, and you put it in a bucket of water and lifted it out, that thin film of water that remains on that sphere is about the depth of the sea, right? The earth is vast and the sea is just a little tiny. It's like comparatively. So how difficult would it be to turn the water from this 3 foot diameter model of the earth, that little film of water, it's nothing for us, right? We can just turn, you could coat that with blood and that would be it. It would be done. To God, the earth is nothing. So it's nothing for him to put a staff. He could have brought Moses back, had him put a stick in the Atlantic Ocean, and the Atlantic Ocean turns to blood. We're talking about God here. So it's doable. And it will be done. And so everything that has a soul in the waters will die. A third of the creatures. And a third of the ships decayed. Now listen to this quote by A. Enoch at the end of this section. Cannot he who made the sea change the character of its waters? If God is going to impress mankind with his power and righteousness, it would be useless to repeat the marvels which greet them every day. We are greeted every day with marvels. The sun appears to rise, it appears to set. We have a canopy of stars above that are hanging in midair. Flowers, plants, birds fly. Bees pollinate the flowers, return to the hive, create honey. Unbelievable things. Babies are born. Unbelievable marvels, miracles we're confronted with every day. And yet, what's happened? We've become immune to it. We shrug and say, I wish God would show us a miracle. Oh, he shows you a miracle every day. Life is a miracle. God help atheists. Well, God blinds atheists. God will help them in their time. But how you can look at creation and not see a mind behind it, not see a genius, creative, power, omniscient, almighty, omnipotent, and simple for him to do these things. But mankind, in order to be impressed, needs something different. Or as A.E.K. puts it, they need something stupendous, unnatural, and terrifying. Let me get to that part. I didn't read you that yet, did I? I saw these three words and I thought, wow, what fantastic adjectives. Listen to this. If God is going to impress mankind with his power and righteousness, it would be useless to repeat the marvels which greet them every day. His acts must be stupendous, unnatural, and terrifying. Stupendous, unnatural, and terrifying. And when God concentrates on these three things, unnatural, stupendous, and terrifying, then you're going to see the most unnatural, stupendous, and terrifying things you've ever seen or imagined. Because we're talking about God, the creator of the universe. and the one who put such diligent care into the creation of the honeybee or the flower or the baby in the womb is going to now concentrate for 3.5 years on unnatural, stupendous, terrifying events. And it has to be this way in order to shake the foundations of people who cease being impressed by the miracles they're greeted with every day. Israel's a great example of this. Think of what God did for them when they came out of Egypt. Opened the Red Sea, gave them food miraculously. And they yawned and said, "What have you done for us lately?" Because these things become commonplace. And we wake up and that's another crappy day. And we're surrounded by miracles. That's another crappy day. And so, don't you sometimes want to be kicked out of that? I mean, I hate myself for having this attitude. I shouldn't say that. I don't hate myself, of course. I love myself. I'm my own best friend. But I'm frustrated with myself, let's put it that way, when I look at the miracles. I mean, I'm a far cry from an atheist. Atheists are just, they're nuts. I know God made them that way, but I can still call them nuts, okay? They're like insentient. They can't see that God did all these wonderful things. That was all an accident. It's all an accident. Oh, the honeybee's an accident. The dandelion is an accident? The thunder that follows the lightning is an accident? Oh, no. But, you know, hey, we all get this way. We're not atheists, but we yawn. That's one step away from atheism, a yawn. It's like, oh, show me something, God. Show me you're here. Show me your presence. That's one step away from atheism, really. Are you kidding me? Look at everything God did. So, even we who are enlightened by the Spirit of God can become this way, can become bored by the world, bored by the fact that we're members of the body of Christ. Imagine the world at large, what it takes for them. And so we're seeing it here. That's why I'm telling you, this stuff is real. It's happening. It's not fake red. It's blood in the water. It's blood coming from the sky with flames of fire coming out of the sky. It's a gigantic meteor that to John looks like a volcano hitting the water, and it has the effect of Moses' staff in Egypt, but instead of turning one river or two little rivers to blood, it turns a third of the oceans to blood. And if you think it's not going to happen, you're not going to be here to see it. But folks, this is real. It's going to happen. And it gives you a really, this is one way you can find out the stubbornness of humanity. You can either know it by looking at it and say, boy, they're stubborn, or you can see what God has to do to wake them up, and that should give you a calibration of the stubbornness of humanity, which is profound. But the trials God brings, the calamities He brings to wake them up are equally as profound.